Well, it's a lot of distance to cover here, our territory.
I was going to say.
But I operate, I mean, really, energy. I operate from the premise that everything is about energy. Everything. And I spent a lifetime, or it seems like a lifetime, but I spent a long time active. Political activist, and then I walked away from that because it didn't make sense to me anymore. I became, when I look at politics, when I had the identity of a political activist, because that was the first idea. Once I was on my own, that's the first identity I took, was political activist. And I spent 10 years doing that. And then when that came to an end for me, you know, I had to examine the reality of all that, and I realized, well, this, as a Native person, this doesn't really work. Because when I had that identity of a political activist, everything about energy. So when I had that identity of a political activist, I was putting all my energy in identifying as a political activist. When that became my identity, then that means I could only see as a political activist. You know, I forgot who I was. Yeah, I'm a human being. And I think that it's important that we all remember that's who we are. That's who we are. We are human beings. Political activism may be something that I do, or a plumber may be something that I do, but I'm none of these things. I'm a human being, but I confused the things that I do for my identity as to who I was, and I was blind because I could only see in this very narrow perspective. I mean, it's just a different version of being a tea partier, right? It's just here. This is how you see it. And the other thing I learned from that experience for me was when I looked at for what we were doing as political activists, it was like, hold it. We're trying to get our liberation, so to speak, or our freedom through political activism, but they're not our politics. So we're using somebody else's definition and rules all the way down the line. So no matter what we do, they got us. Because it's not our politics. And what I mean by not our politics is like every political organization I've ever been involved in, but I walked away a long time ago, so I can't speak for now. But every political organization I was ever involved in, number one, they develop an ego, they become mm-hmm. territorial, mm-hmm. and they're competitive. They're not cooperative. Mm-hmm. Politics is not cooperative, it's competitive. I saw too many times of unity, and all in the end, to me, all that unity meant was, it's still in the end, those are the most aggressive who are going to get their way, right? That was unity. That's the unity I experienced. I don't know what goes on now, right? But the unity I experienced was, in the end, they were just, in the end, you know, and so when I look back at those things, I saw how all our energy was being put into things. And our energy was being put into either illusion or unbalanced, keep things that were ideology that was keeping us unbalanced. As a movement, as individuals, you know, it was keeping us unbalanced. And if we're in a system that's designed, everything's about energy. We're in a system that is designed to absorb and consume energy. That's what the system is designed to do. All right, whether we're plugging in our iPhone to iCharge it, or we're buying gas for our car, all right, or we're buying GMO food. Everything is designed to consume energy. And energy, see, I think that energy, the source of our energy, is the being part of human. And that's why I think, to me, it's important that no matter what level, whoever we're working with, it's getting, trying to reawaken this memory of being a human being. That's our primary identity. Race and gender, all the rest of that are secondary identities. We're human beings first, and then the gender, and then the race. All of the rest of this mm-hmm. becomes... And then there's a... Gender and race are secondary identities, and then you get these other sub-identities that go on to it, our politics, or our religions, or our whatever. Then all these little sub-identities. So it's almost like we're human beings, and then the human... And with these sub-identities, the emphasis is being put on the human part rather than on the being part, the source of the energy. How many times have you said or heard people say, I'm only human? All right, I'm only human. Then I'm not recognizing who I am. I'm not recognizing my potential. You know, my perceptions, all right? I think, and like energy, and we're in a system that's designed to consume energy. So to me, it's like, well, hold it. If we want to get anywhere, then we have to find a way to be able to use our energy so the system can't consume it. Mm-hmm. The same way that it consumes it now. It's like a way of, and for us as individually, for us as individuals, the being part of human, that's the energy source, the being part. Because when we got no more being, we go back to the earth. That's just, you know, that's, we call it death or whatever somebody wants to call it. But when the being is gone, then the human can't function. So obviously the energy source for us in the human being is in the being. And the human is the wiring, so to speak, right? That carries the electric of the being. So the being. So as humans, how we manifest the power of being is through our intelligence. This is the converter. This is what takes the being part, the energy of the being, all right, and our intelligence. So how we perceive reality says how we will use our intelligence to manifest the energy of our being. So if we're not perceiving reality as human beings, we're perceiving it from the sub-identity, the secondary identity by race or gender, right, then we're not accessing the energy. See, so if we're not using the energy properly, if we don't understand who we are, and we don't recognize and understand who we are, then we're not going to use the energy properly. All right, then in a way we've been imprinted by society to misuse energy. Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. So all right, so to me it becomes an issue, and I don't think. It's about a revolutionary solution. I think it's about an evolutionary solution. Mm-hmm. All right? Evolution. It's like, I saw this woman made this sign, but she took revolution and she separated the R, all right, moved it away, and it says R evolution. See, and that's what it's about, R evolution. We are in an evolutionary reality. We're a part of an evolutionary reality. We're a part of a revolutionary reality. But that's the sub-reality. Mm-hmm. We revolve around the sun or whatever all that's about. But that's a part, that's a sub-part of the main part, which is evolution. Mm-hmm. Am I making? Mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. Evolution. All right, so we are connected to an evolutionary reality. We generate our power and our energy through how we perceive reality through our intelligence. And I think that no matter what situation, if we're dealing with incarcerated, it doesn't matter who we're dealing with. I think we need to start thinking in terms of the basic thing of recognizing who we are. Human beings. That our power comes from the being part. We manifest that power through how we perceive reality. Because too many times we've been imprinted to believe that money will get us power. All right, that weapons will give us power, all right, or that religion will give us power. But in reality, these things, if you get money, that may give you access to authority. All right, if you use weapons, that gives you access to authority. Religion can maybe give you access to authority, but authority isn't power. Authority actually, in a lot of ways, is the absence of power. They need to have authority because they don't really have power. Mm-hmm. I mean, because when you go back to the tribal indigenous systems, there were not authoritarian images or figures. There was authority, but it was in a different way. It was the way that the people lived. So it was a consciousness. It wasn't an imposed, you had the police coming and beating you up stuff. And I think part of it has to do with us recognizing who we are. On the energy, because I think that we've used, in my experience, we were trying to find political solutions, or economic solutions, or whatever the solutions were that we were trying to find, But we weren't approaching it from purely from the point of energy. How do we use our energy to get a solution that we want? Right? And we never really approached it that way. And I think for now in our generation, as to who we are in our generation, I look back at this and I think that one of the most helpful things that our generation can do is go to the next generation and say, hey, look, this is where we fucked up. Mm-hmm. See, I don't see enough of that. I don't see enough of it. What I see going on is, hey, we did this. This is how we did it. We stood up for all this and that. But, you know, but when we really look at it pragmatically and objectively, what we stood up for, all right, it was the other side just buying time. So they threw us some crumbs so they could buy time. And their authoritarian state is more vicious and more well-entrenched now than it was, all right, when we were going. Yeah. I mean, this is the reality of it. Mm-hmm. You know, so we did all of that stuff. Like, I watched this Occupy movement, mm-hmm. right? And I saw people from our generation coming out and rah-rahing them on, saying, yeah, right, you know, I'm glad to see it. And I think, well, hold it, this is like an ego trip. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not willing to talk about mistakes realistically. We're going to encourage the next generation to make the same mistakes that we made, all right? Maybe the terminology changes and things and the technology, but basically the energy, because they're putting their energy in the same way we did it, all right? And so that didn't really work. Now, So part of it is, so as human beings, we're in an energy. As human beings, we're in a technologic, industrial, perceptional reality, and it's a mining reality. It mines energy, right? It mines the energy of the trees, it mines the energy of the earth, it mines energy, the water, the uranium, the oil, it mines energy. Now remember, we are units of energy. Every human, the being part is the energy unit. So we are units of energy. We live in a perceptual reality. They mine our bone, flesh, and blood. Our DNA is made up of the metals, minerals, and liquids of the earth. We are shapes of the earth. We have being. Our being comes from our relationship to the sun, sky, universe, where the energy comes from. That's all right. That's our. We have it. All things of the earth: a tree, uranium, fossil fuel, whatever it is made up of the same DNA as us. All right, and it has the same relationship to sun, sky, universe, so it has being. It gets its energy from there. All right, see, so that's what all my relations is about. Now we're aware that they mine the uranium, they mine the fossils, they mine all of that for energy. But in order for there to be a need for those other things, they have to mine us. See, we don't understand. We don't think in terms. They're mining the being part of human. All right, and then they're mining the being part of human. All right, to distort our and when you mine all the rest of the things, whether it's the trees, whether you mine the oil, you mine the uranium, the mining process leaves behind poison and toxic that are dangerous to the environment. When they mine the being part of human, it leaves behind poison and toxic, and the poison and toxic are the fears and the doubts and the insecurities. All right, they become a part of our human perception because we no longer recognize that we're human beings. So they become a part of the human perception. They're not a part of the being human perception. They're a part of the human perception. So that mining process takes place by how we're indoctrinated to perceive reality through the class system, through the educational systems, through all the authoritarian systems. All right, that's how they do the mining. But it leaves behind the poison and toxic in our consciousness, which the fears, doubts, and insecurities. And then once that's put in there, then we perceive reality not through our abilities. We perceive reality from the perception of our inabilities. Am I good enough? Through our fears, our doubts, and our insecurities. And then we find, the way the system works, but in order to compensate for that, they introduce us to pride. So that they indoctrinate us as they mine us. They indoctrinate us that to replace humility with pride. All right? They indoctrinate us to replace a sense of well-being with fear and doubt of self. Now, in our generation's self-esteem, I don't remember ever hearing the word, but by the next generation, low self-esteem, that's the big... All right? And so anyway, to use that terminology, we're imprinted to perceive reality that there's something wrong with us. So after that, once that takes place, no matter how good our intentions are, whatever we get involved in, all right, that's a part of the energy we're projecting, that there's something wrong with us. You know, and we may hide it with our mask and our angers and our fears and stuff, but in the end, that seems to be the core, that seems to, fear, all right, seems to be the core motivator. So that's what distorts our perception of reality. We're in a system designed to consume energy. All right, so how do we find, to me, it becomes a matter of how do we find a way to not feed our energy to it? We're in a system that has imprinted us that this civil disobedience, protest, all right, these are the ways, all right, to get your rights. All right, but hold it. If these were really the ways to get our rights, then they wouldn't have told us about it. All right, I'm telling you, I guarantee you, because these fuckers are like that. All right, they wouldn't have told us this if it would really get us there. All right, now let's go back and terminology. I think we should be very careful with the word believe. All right, and think. Believe, because all of the mining process, imprinting, to get us to perceive reality differently, all right? Everything they did to us, they did it to get us to believe their perception of reality. It was genocide, you know, it's class systems, everything, all right, is to get us to believe. And yet, you know, so I want to kind of explore that word a bit. And so to believe, everything's about energy. When we think, we project electromagnetic energy. That thought is electromagnetic energy being put out into the universe. All right, so we're projecting energy all of the time. We're constantly projecting energy. Now, thinking represents energy that flows. It's going to go do in an evolutionary context. Believing represents energy that has been dammed up. It can't flow anymore because all belief, all right, has its biases, its prejudice. It's not objective. All right. See, so we have been imprinted. All right. Number one, to have low self-esteem, there's something wrong with us. All right. And we've been imprinted to believe that. We didn't think it up. And no matter inside of your own self, every negative image you have, you didn't think it up. I guarantee we didn't think it up. Somebody put it there repeatedly until we believed it, and then it became a part of our perceptional reality. So every time that. So we're conditioned to believe, all right? And so what believing does is it takes that energy, the energy of thinking, the electromagnetic energy of thinking that's supposed to flow, and it dams it up and puts it in a container. But it's energy. It has to do something. It can't just be, right? It's energy. So what does it do? It intensifies behind the belief, and the basic core belief in almost every individual is that there's something wrong with me. I'm not good enough. So this dammed up energy is going to come out through that. It's going through the stress, all right, which creates and produces emotional reactions, and in emotional reactions, we're not going to think clearly. Have you ever had an emotional meltdown? Or, all right, and then go back and say, I wish.
So I have a question regarding that. So when you're talking about belief in that sense, are we also including like our belief system, like when we're raised up with
that belief
values?
Well, see, this is what I'm saying. We have to be careful with the word because because I don't know if we had belief systems. Quite frankly, they told us we did. I think we had systems of knowledge. We knew this. We knew these things. I mean, I think that more of it was knowledge than it was belief. We knew that if we lived this way, all right, this was going to be what was going to happen. And then they come along later and say it was a belief.
Okay.
All right? I mean, I think this. I mean, this is all speculation on my mind. I mean, you know.
The other thing I was just thinking while you're talking about that is that dammed up energy, I'm thinking of its link to how it becomes commodified. Because what do you do with the energy? I mean, how are they living off of it would be my next question. So they've got to live off that dammed up energy, so they've got to sell you whatever it is to keep it dammed up or to keep it channeled in whatever direction it is, right?
Yeah, no, this is why we overconsume. Mm-hmm. All right, because we're trying to fill a hole inside of us. So that's, I mean, see, it's
say we need something.
Yeah, right, I mean, see, like in this country, up in the late early 1900s, once they'd figured out mass production. All right, once they'd figured out mass production. At that time, the average American, they would go, when they went to the store, they would get what they needed, and that was it. So, but now, hold on, we got mass production. We can make Model Ts, 1,000 a day or whatever it is, right? But we can do all this and that. So, but here's how the Americans are doing. So they brought in Freud's nephew. And right. Freud's nephew did this big analysis and came up with this big program on how to indoctrinate to manipulate the mass psychology so that they would go and buy what they wanted. But first they had to create the want. See, and the technology was emerging with the radio, with the newspaper, all right, and the and promotion and advertising and the new products coming out. See, once they were making it in abundance. So they started the manipulation of the mass psychology, all right, to turn people into consuming what they wanted way beyond what they needed. All right, and so, yes. So because as a net result of this, we're very confused. I mean, our intentions are good. See, energy, our intentions are good. Our motives are good, generally. Well, anyway, here's what I think. You know, if there was a bad result and someone said, well, that wasn't my intention. Yeah. See, well then, all right. Well then, what I think there's a synchronicity. I think there's motive and intention and understanding and then action. And I think when those four things are synchronized, then you're not going to have a bad result. But too many times, I know people that have good intentions, but their motives I would question. All right? Or you can reverse it, right? You know, but too many times. So I think it's a certain... But see, all of this comes back to our ability to think. See, when we think things out, and we start to see these kinds of things. See, because I think, especially like to young people, to me, like around the issue of drugs. If it was me, I would tell them, all right, yet about how dangerous drugs are, but I would not include marijuana. Because they know that's a lie. It's a lie. Just from this end, marijuana is not a drug. The earth does not grow drugs. This is just a logical, physical reality. The earth does not grow drugs. Somebody makes drugs out of what the earth grows. See, and you know, it's such a basic reality, all right. And maybe intuitively, right? Something, but so I think it's about, you know, it's a herb, it's a plant, it's a medicine, and I think speaking to them, you know, about you, especially with around the cultural thing, it's a medicine, so you use it as a medicine, right? But if you take any medicine and you misuse it, it's not going to work for you.
That's right.
Right, but if we go around telling them that marijuana is a drug, right, and they realize, you know, hold it, they see a whole different trip on it. Then they're going to get into the drug stuff. This is what leads them in. All right, I don't think that marijuana is a gateway drug. I think the misperception about marijuana that we pass on to them is the gateway. You know, and I'm not advocating one way or the other. I'm just saying if we're going to talk with them, right, and I think helping them. Helping young people to understand that they are human beings, and about how much power they have. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, if we're going to talk about power, and because most young people are that they feel powerless, that's why a lot of this to deal with situations. But if we want to talk about power, and this, I don't think this is just for young people. I think this is for all of us. Is that have you ever had a situation where you're feeling powerless about life, whatever it is? And while you're feeling powerless, how bad can you make yourself feel? And then how does that affect the people you're closest to or you interact with? That's power. All right? That's power. But it's power unrecognized. All right? And how is that power manifested? Through a negative self-image or things that we were told that weren't correct that we believe. All right? But my point being is it represents intelligence use incoherently and chaotically. All right, and we generate that, and we generate energy. So imagine if we took the responsibility to use our intelligence with clarity and coherency, we would generate an entirely different kind of energy. Because remember, we project electromagnetic energy. All right, so and it's like we're trying to create a solution to a problem. And this is why I think that a lot of the active movements, they did what they did, but we didn't really achieve what we were after. But one of the reasons I think that that happened was because, number one, we emotionally reacted to what we believed. We didn't think things out. All right? I think that had a lot to do with it as to why we didn't get our objectives met. Right? And what was the other thing? But so how we use the energy of our thinking, the electromagnetic energy. Yeah, all right. So if I'm projecting, if in my core of me that there's something not right with me, all right, then no matter what I do, I'm going to bring some of that back because it's electromagnetic. I'm going to attract the magnetic aspect of it if I think there's something not right with me. If we have a problem, and for any problem, because everything's about energy, the energy we take to put in to creating the solution for that problem, that energy is going to be in that the solution. So if what we're doing is if we're going to create a solution for the problem, but we have this term low self-esteem, so to speak, all right? If our fears are masked by our prides and our other stuff, we'll see, but if all that stuff's in there, then that stuff's going to go into the solution. So if we're making emotional reactionary, using our energy in an emotionally reactive way, all right, because we, out of desperation to create a solution, no matter what solution there is, that energy is going to be in it. That's how they get. That's how they've been doing this all this time, because we have been imprinted to be emotionally reactive. We've been imprinted to be judgmental. So to be careful with the believe thing, all right? Because every time you say I believe, that means we're not thinking. Yeah. We're just shutting it off, all right? And that's reality. But that energy's got to go somewhere, right? So it'll come out in some other kind of a way. All right? And the other thing is judgment. I think it's our responsibility to think and not to believe. I think it's our responsibility to recognize and not to judge. Because if we judge, we can't recognize. Because all judgments have their biases and their limitations. But if we recognize, then we can see what really happened. If we recognize, we'll make it personal about judgment. Somebody told us a lot of stuff when we were young, all right, to give us this low self-esteem thing, so to speak. All right, somebody put all that in us when we were young and we believed it. All right, and then we've judged ourselves because of those negative beliefs. We've judged ourselves. All right, but if we took the time to look back and recognize how it happened, then we would see we didn't ask for it. Not a one of us ever asked, all right, to be judged or traumatized with judgment when we were young. Not a one of us asked for the trauma, all right, that made us start believing the negatives. But see, if we would go back and look at it from recognizing, then we start to become more clear and coherent in our thinking. All right, because I think that for me, so. When I'm saying this thing about it's designed to we're in a system designed to absorb energy, then part of it, we need to start thinking in terms of how do we deny it, that energy. Like, I mean, I'm going to just go the most basic way, is to think and not believe. To truly be humble and not prideful. Because, see, they put all that in us, see, because a pride, you know, because pride, I spent a lot of years as an activist, Indian and proud, or whatever that was all about. And if I could go back and undo that little one, I would. Right? Because I've seen pride get in the way. I've seen it get in the way more than I've seen it help. If you want, I mean, when things, real things need to be done. If it's all superficial stuff, yeah, well then all right, it's all good, rah-rah. But when you get right down to the stuff needing to be done, it's pride gets in the way almost every time. You know, and they started indoctrinating us with that as Native people. When they started slaughtering us, the noble red man, they were proud and they fought valiantly. No, it wasn't what it was. All right, they were trying to kill us, and we fought. All right, we fought to save our lives. Pride didn't have anything to do with it. It didn't have anything to do with it. It was the humility of us knowing who we are as the children of Earth and what our responsibility to the Earth was. That's what really made us tick as to who we were. But now I hear the word humility used a lot. But I see pride practiced. I mean, pretty much, you know. And it's like looking at the, and for us, it's about looking at these things you know, let's look at reality the best that we can, right? And sort out what makes sense to us. But to just do things the way that we did it, to encourage the next generation to do things just exactly the way we did it in our generation, I think is, I think it's wrong. It's ethically wrong if we're going to get down to it. And if we're going to be real to who we are, all right, the other thing I think is that if we're going to look at, let's say, spiritual realities, all right, because I know we all have our own interpretation and understanding of a spiritual connection. I do not understand how we can truly show spiritual respect to anything, however you look at the Creator. I do not understand how we can truly show true spiritual respect if we don't like ourselves. Plain and simply put. All right?
Yep.
Because remember, energy that you put into a solution is going to be in the solution. All right? See, so we're quite out of, we're just out of synchronization, right? I don't understand. And then how we're going to show respect to our Creator, the spirituality of our Creator, if we don't use our intelligence respectfully. But that goes again about liking ourselves and respecting ourselves, right? And so there's certain things that I think really need to be kind of looked at. Like a lot of native or younger people, that, you know, because they're so overwhelmed by stuff going on, you know, we forgot what tradition is. Mm-hmm. See, and we think we lost our tradition. They took our traditions away. But no, tradition is honor and respect. That is traditionalism. All right, that is what traditionalism is. They can attack our ceremonies, they can attack all of our stuff, but that doesn't take away our tradition per se. Am I this making sense, right? You know, I mean, see, it's because a lot of illusion and mind bending has been going on in how we've been imprinted. But to me, so because I really don't have a real answer how we address to solving the problem with specifically with the young. But I do think that if we talk to them just straight up, right, just straight up, that we would talk to anybody else, we talk to them straight up and help them to understand about who they are and their relationship to power. You know, the real power that they have. I think that, you know, I think asking, you know, whatever it is, and they don't have to tell us, they don't have to spill their guts to us, but think about whatever it is that first set the trauma in your head. What is it the first time somebody told you you were no good? First time somebody said whatever, but said those kinds of things to you. You know, think about it. You know? Yeah, that's something somebody said until you believed it. It isn't. That doesn't mean it's true. You know, I think, in those kinds of ways that it was, because my whole technique or thing about it is, and it doesn't matter about age, is I just say as many things as I can that make sense to me, and then it may, and if I throw enough things out there, I know somebody will think about something. All right? I mean, I use that shotgun approach. Here, say it all as much as you can, right? And then whatever makes sense, because different things make sense to different individuals. My objective is to stimulate thinking. It's to stimulate thinking, because that's what I see is the about energy. All right, that is the ultimate thing that I see that's going to help us to change anything. Because see, we've been imprinted to fight them, and we're never going to outfight them. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in our lifetime. It's not going to happen in our great grandchildren's lifetime. It's never going to happen. We're never ever going to outfight them. But they want us to believe that we have a chance. Right, out fighting them, you know. Right? But in reality, is what the one? What do they fear? If they fear anything, it's our ability to think. See, we can outthink them. Mm-hmm. See, but they don't want us to understand that, because that changes the numbers. See, because you live under an authoritarian system. All right, in the authoritarian system, only X amount have permission to think. Mm-hmm. See, only X amount of them have permission to think. Then everybody else got to follow the chain of command. All right? But so, and you look at the authority in America right now, just hypothetics, but like there are close to 300 million people in this country. Even if they're using 100 million of them to suppress the other 200 million, they were still the majority. Now, if that majority was thinking clear with clarity and coherency, all right, then the dynamic would change. I mean, this is an extreme thing, but if everyone woke up tomorrow morning and said, I will not enable anything I know to be a lie, the energy dynamic would change immediately. The system couldn't function. I mean, it's an extreme hypothetical, right? But the reality is, I will no longer enable the lie. And I think that it's important for us to adopt that as a mindset for ourselves. You know, because, you know, and when I mean no longer enable the lie, here's a lie that we shouldn't enable, that there's something wrong with us, that we're not good enough. See, we shouldn't, we're enabling those lies. You know, so, you know, and I think that on an individual basis, so to me, don't make prideful decisions. You know what I mean? Make clear and coherent decisions about whatever it is. And, you know, and it's hard to not have an emotional reaction sometimes, you know. I mean, it's really hard. So I'm not saying don't have an emotional reaction. I'm just saying don't make an emotional decision. If everyone woke up tomorrow morning and said, I will not enable anything I know to be a lie, the energy dynamic would change immediately. The system couldn't function. I mean, it's an extreme hypothetical, right? But the reality is, I will no longer enable the lie. And I think that it's important for us to adopt that as a mindset for ourselves. You know, because, you know, and when I mean no longer enable the lie, here's a lie that we shouldn't enable, that there's something wrong with us, that we're not good enough. See, we shouldn't, we're enabling those lies. You know, so, you know, and I think that on an individual basis, so to me, don't make prideful decisions. You know what I mean? Make clear and coherent decisions about whatever it is. And, you know, and it's hard to not have an emotional reaction sometimes, you know. I mean, it's really hard. So I'm not saying don't have an emotional reaction. I'm just saying don't make an emotional decision. You know, sometimes maybe we got to have the reaction and get it out of our system so we can make a clear decision. But too many times, and for the movements, see, that we were all a part of, they all operate on emotional decisions. You know, so the beast says over here, well, I'm going to invade Syria. So everybody gets an emotional reaction. Then over here, well, here's Fukushima, everybody, right? And all these emotional decisions, see, and there's no focused energy. The energy is it's something about an internal combustion engine, you know, the chaos, when it makes chaos, makes the engine run. All right, well, the chaos of our intelligence is what makes this other engine run.
I got a question, because you're so right. A lot of the kids that were part of Think Outside the Bomb went and trained in a place that we have for children. It's called the Tallulah Learning and Healing Center for Children. And young kids come there from, you know, all walks of life and all cultures. And one of the things is that some of the young people came back and because this is what we talked about, right? What we did was show the masses of the young people and the energy that the young people had and what they were capable of doing. On the other hand, the system itself set back, and I would use the things you're saying is mine the energy. So the energy that the young people put there, with all good intentions, at the end of that, were totally exhausted and confused about the next steps. Not to say that some people weren't and didn't know where they were going, but the majority of them didn't know.
Yeah.
And which is really sad, right? And so all of this thing about passing it on to the young people. Give it to the young people. And I always say, why are you going to give it to the young people? They don't deserve it. You know, have you clarified what it is that you're talking about? What have we come clear and clean with all of the things that have happened in the movement that we can then say, we don't want you to take this junk, but now take who you are and move with what you know. So I think that in terms of the other example I would use is the clear example of what happened with the immigrant movement in this country. When we had thousands upon thousands of people marching around the country, right? And once again, this country sat back and they allowed it to happen. Watching the amount of energy that could be put forth in terms of these mass movements, and then sitting back and letting people again wear themselves out because of how do we move in that direction to find a solution that they already have.
Yeah.
It comes to a point in reality for me, as you're talking, is that we have to find that source of energy and how we learn to understand it. Because more than utilizing it, right, is to understand it. Because as we sit here, right, the energy that we all feel and the connectedness that we all feel is the things which lack, right, with a lot of our young people, because most of our young people are just gung-ho to do whatever it has to be done in the spirit of the revolution. But nobody's sitting back and thinking as they
It's what we need to encourage. That's what I'm saying. It's like as an example about what we have to understand between. Because I look at what Alcatraz. I look at the things that I was involved in. They can't do that today. That can't be done today. You know, and it's like as an example. This Occupy Wall Street. It was a trap. You know, they can identify everybody that has a cell phone that was at Occupy Wall Street, and their cell phone doesn't even have to be on. They can identify everybody that was at any Occupy Wall Street if they had a cell phone. Now, what does that mean? That means, well, they got the phone number. That means, well, they know who you call up, all right? And then they know who they call up, right? It was something sinister lurking way back here in the shadows, all right? Seriously. Because they're not identifying people just for the fun of it. They're the reason they're doing this that we will truly understand better. But everybody was emotional decisions. But everybody emotionally got caught up and ran out and jumped into what was basically a middle-class white man's deal, all right? But in reality, all right? And they're using Idle No More for the same thing. To identify people, all right, but that whole thing was bait. And I think that the Occupy Wall Street, I think that the moneyed people, they organized it, all right. So for purposes and reasons of identification, all right, and because they gave them everything, they can identify down, right. I mean, if they have the phone number and they have the name, then they got your picture. Because you have a license or you have some kind of ID somewhere, then they know who you are, they know where your money, they know everything. All right? And I think that and they followed the money that was contributed to it. See, so when we're talking to young people now or anybody, I'm not saying not to protest. I'm not going to say, you know, because I understand some body stuff has to be involved in it. But think it out. You know, have a clear strategic objective. Because what I was saying, like in terms of non-cooperation, but nobody wanted to hear this from me about because everybody was all gung-ho on Wall Street or Occupy. Nobody really wanted to hear it. But if all of the time, because what did the Occupy Wall Street achieve? Yeah. You know, I mean, other than somebody released some steam, emotional steam, but what did it achieve?
The 1% control of the country.
Yeah, that's right. And now they know who the main ones are that resist it too. I mean, when you look at, but looking in terms of energy, if all of the time and money and effort that had been put in to organizing Occupy Wall Street, if all of the energy, if all of that counted up as energy, was put into organizing people not to spend any money on the same day. All right, trying to organize 30% of the population not to spend any money on the same day. All right, then there would have been an objective. All right, that would have made a statement that they could not ignore, and it would have made a statement without handing everybody's identities over to them.
You know, we have these kind of discussions with the youth, and even the youth come up and they talk about this picture.
Yeah.
You know, but this is the reality. This is the reality of what society is doing and can do. Mm-hmm. You know, but many adults don't believe that, or we deny it. We deny that this system has evolved to this level, that their technology, and it's not just about sending somebody to the moon. It took a lot of technology to do that. And in the process, they develop other things and other connections that they even sold back as commercial products. You know, New York set up the cameras, right? They set up the cameras where now they can watch every street and they can do facial profiling and all this. They had a company that when they hear a gunshot go off, you know, they went in partnership. This company went in partnership with New York to develop this system. You know, so, you know, when we look at that and how they evolved, we have to look also how we evolved. And what denied us from our own evolvement, and also how we denied ourselves, and how we deny ourselves today. You know, this reality, you know, how do we participate in it? And I go back to, you know, we talk about energy. You know, we look at the children. How do we interfere with their development? Really young. They're coming up. What do we teach them? What do we tell them? What do we feed them? Not only the food, but the thoughts and ideas. Their environment that we create. You know, the consumerism that we hear, it has evolved. We live in a consumer society. Youth are worth $10-15 billion before they hit 13, because they have the power to influence their parents to buy. As parents, you know, if we really look at the history of this country, you know, are we in denial with the reality? Because if we are, we can't come up with a solution. The way that society is now, and we look at the unemployment, like look at Watsonville, 25-30% unemployment. Who's unemployed? What do they look like? Mm-hmm. You know?
And where do those jobs go?
Yeah. And where do jobs go?
Where are they?
You know, so this is a reality. In the movement, you know, we were young. You know, we looked at all kinds of ideas, whether it was from China, whether it was Marx, whether it was Engels, whether it was Chairman Mao, whether it was Malcolm X, whoever, because we were people that were trying to survive and trying to understand what our reality was. And at the same time as we were coming up with our solutions, right, community, we had community organizations. You know, we have people that work. That money came into organizations, and organizations developed breakfast programs, developed schools, developed free medical clinics. They came out in San Francisco, out of San Francisco General Hospital. You know, the workers, our families were there, and then doctors and everybody got together. We had to work together, but also we had these things like the Eagle, or not knowing how to develop relations. So maybe we weren't together as we should be. But in San Francisco, in Chinatown, you had Iwakuni. In Japantown, you had J-Town Collective. In Petrero Hill, you had the Young Patriots, who were white. You had, in the Mission, you had La Raza organizations, or Los Yates. You know, in Fillmore, you had the Panthers. And everybody was doing something. You had a Native American movement. You had Valencia. You had all these things, and people were trying to do what? Express our humanness. Survive. And part of what interfered with that movement was this system that didn't want this to happen. They want us to get together and talk, and they definitely don't want us to get together and act. So they interfered with it. Took leaders, took them out. In jail, but also we didn't take ownership of the things we were doing for ourselves. Drugs, they were there. Alcohol was there. You know, Eagles were there. You know, personal interest was there. You know, we also, as people, I think, today that have come from that. You know, even today, I look at, you know, in unions. Okay, we had union elections recently for business agents. And even within there, they're fighting because they have different opinions of how to do things. But what is the commonality they have? They're supposed to be there working for workers' rights, trying to develop a better, you know, life for their families. Well, we have gangs. We have North and South. But we got a lot in common, right? And even in the same family. You know, we're brothers and sisters, but you're North and I'm a South. You know? So what is the ownership of saying, taking ownership and saying, man, I'm doing something wrong. You know? I'm doing something wrong. When I come home, put down, you know, we're going to drink. If the kids come, let them drink because at least they're home. What do we do? And in this circle, we have to ask ourselves too, what do we do in our habits that take that energy? Because we talked about energy way back, right? And either you're dispersing it, right? Because we're using it. How are you using it? Efficiently? We think about our cars and we say, hey man, I want my car to be efficient. How can I, you know, balance my tires, my engine, you know, air cleaners and all that. But what about us in our life? We use a lot of energy and time in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it brought us here today. This is how we, why we are who we are today. We're part of that. I'm part of that. You know, I came out of that. I'm here today and I'm still involved in the movement. Looking at saying, hey, how do we promote life? How do we become more efficient? Mm-hmm. How do we push aside the BS and not participate in it?
Yeah.
And to me, that's the goal, not to participate, not to get caught up in being defined. You know? I mean, I didn't think anything was wrong with me growing up. I heard that, you know, if you're a person of color, then you're nothing. Tracking system? I didn't develop the tracking system. I was part of it, you know, but I didn't say I wanted to be in it.
That's right.
Well, John, we are, as humans, able to think, if we let ourselves. How would you say that we as humans would need to stand up to the industrial military complex on a human level? I mean, in our hearts, so that it just doesn't keep continuing. How does that?
Well, first,
transfer.
I think we should, whatever we're going to participate, whatever we're going to do, we should do it on the human being level. The human being, because if we're going to do it on the human level, we're ignoring the energy part of us, the being part.
Okay.
So I think human beings should be, that's who we are, right? And no matter what we do, military, industrial, whatever we do as human beings, we need to do it with clear, coherent thinking. See, that's what it needs. That's the core of what is needed, is for us to think with clarity and coherency. Because that is a way of seeing. See, we have an ability to see, all right, beyond our eyes. And with clarity, it's almost like with seeing and feeling. Clear, coherent use of our intelligence is a way of seeing, a way of feeling. All right, and I think that's necessary to anything that we do. All right, if we're going to stand up to the military-industrial complex, number one, we need to take responsibility for our intelligence and use it clearly and coherently. We need to take responsibility for our intelligence and use it clearly and coherently before we do anything. Otherwise, none of the rest of it is just going through motions. Yeah. To take, you know, and I want, because we've been imprinted with this abstraction of freedom, you know, and because I mean, it's a nice rah-rah, the word freedom, but it's a lie. All right? It's a trick and it's a lie. Freedom. Look at the word. Dumb. It ends in dumb. All right? Free and dumb. All right? But let's look at the dumb. D-O-M. It's taken from the Latin for dominion and domination. So they take free and then they add domination to the end of it. All right? That's the dominated free. So what's that mean? Now, and then logical, just logical, practical reality. Someone mentioned about not being in denial and self-denial. Then let's cut right to the chase. We're born into a reality where you have to pay to be born, you have to pay to die, and you got to have money to live. Now, where is the free? I mean, it's basic, simple reality. Where is the free? All right? I mean, simple reality. Now let's go with the other way. I understand the reality of being free. Being free. All right? Now, that makes sense to me. All right? But for human beings to be free, they need to take responsibility. Responsibility is an interesting word. It's two words. Response and ability. Response and ability. All right? And responsibility. Then you put them together. All right? And that's what... So, as a human being... All right, we need to take responsibility. And how do we take responsibility? By respecting and using our intelligence as clearly and coherently as we can. Think things out. Don't make emotional decisions. I'm telling you, because we've been so... Because the whole deal about being imprinted to have all these self-doubts and... I mean, those ones that maybe everybody doesn't get to see, but those, am I good enough? All those hidden, I'm good enough. With all that imprinted in there, right, then... Then that means, with all that imprinting in us, all right, we have a responsibility to deal with that. But the responsibility, as two words, the responsibility is to use our intelligence clearly and coherently and look at that is not the truth, that there's something wrong with us. See, our responsibility in using our intelligence and with clarity and coherency. And I think that when we do that, what we will see, because it is part of an evolutionary. There is only an evolutionary solution. There is no revolutionary solution. But if we take responsibility and it's about a decision we make, and it really is to use our intelligence with clarity and coherency, then we will generate clear and coherent energy. And just how we affect people with the poor me energies, the beating ourselves up energies, we would affect with clear and coherent energy. That's a responsibility. All right? And because there is no instant solution, people get caught up in this the romanticism of revolution, but I'm going to tell you, revolution means you go back to where you came from. All right? That's all revolution means. You go back to where you started from. So if you started out oppressed, you're going to end up back with oppressed. That's revolution. That's just the reality of it. That's what I mean. See, but evolution is another context. Now, if people understood to use revolution, all right, as a point to get somewhere in an evolutionary context, that may be different. But people look at revolution as solving the problem. And it doesn't solve the problem. Yeah. Right? And no revolutionary, I mean, there's romanticisms about certain revolutions and stuff, but in the end, no revolution will ever succeed, because every revolution, no matter who wins it, they end up dealing with the industrial ruling class. See? So yeah. There's an industrial ruling class on this planet. That's who the real threat is against us, all right? And capitalists and Catholics and Jews or Muslims or whatever, all of that, communists, all that. They're just smokescreen stuff. Those, all right? Because that industrial ruling class controls all of that. So if we're going to stand up for anything, then let's stand up for ourselves, all right? And what I mean by stand up for ourselves. And take responsibility to use our intelligence as clearly and coherently as we possibly can, as often as we can, you know. And along the way we do that, because what I find interesting about it is that it becomes easier to do once we start to do it. You know, it's a decision we make. You know, everybody here does something. They have a job, or there's something they like to do, but everybody here has something that they do. And whatever that something that they do is, somewhere they made a decision they were going to learn how to do it. And then they focused the energy of their intelligence on learning how to do it. All right? See, so it's something we do all the time. But this time, it's invisible. It's a different kind of it's a magic. It's not a material magic that you see instantly. It's more of a different kind of evolutionary magic. Make the decision, I'm going to use my intelligence as clearly, coherently as I can. And then do what is necessary to do that, and then this is what starts to open up abilities to see in a whole new dimension. Because the real deal is, to me, is we need in my own personal opinion, all right, is that we need to start thinking. We need to think our way out of this. All right, all the rest of it is secondary. We need to think our way out of this. And when we do it on an individual basis, individually, all right, we will see change in our life individually. It's because it'll be about how we perceive. But see, everybody wants to skip that step. See, but it can't. You can't skip it because we've all been infected with the disease. So now we have to become our own antibiotic, because and I call it an infection. It's like there's this disease that affects the perception of whoever has the disease. It affects the self-perception, which then affects the perception of reality. All right, and we've all been affected by it. But the gift, if we're going to look at spiritual contact, the gift of intelligence that we were given as human beings, see, the gift of intelligence is the one thing that can undo that. It's a decision we make, all right? The decision, clarity and coherency. I'm going to think more and believe less, and I'm not going to judge at all. I'm going to recognize and not judge. You know, and there are fine lines, you know, and people are going to say, you know, But we'll know the difference. We'll know, because when you recognize, you're seeing it for what it is. When you judge, then you're feeling some kind of moral superiority. Basically, that's the best I can break it down to. All right? And sometimes we're going to recognize a thing for what it is, and people are going to try to play word games. No, you're judging. But no, that's not necessarily true. See, that's what I mean. So this way we stay authentic to ourselves.
Uh-huh, authentic.
We should never lie to ourselves. We should never, because we need to, it's up to us to authenticate. All right, that word, right? It's up to us to do it for ourselves. Yeah, authenticate ourselves. It's up to us to do that, right? And because that's part of our gift, the gift of life. It's up to us to do that, and we do that by seeing who we are and understanding who we are and then how we do our act. Yeah, that's right.
Recognize we have the gift think clearly.
And we all have that gift. All right, and the deal is, because once we start to do that, then there's going to be people that don't get it and don't understand. But the thing is, fine, they don't understand, but I'm not going to argue. You know, I mean, if somebody disagrees with me and they don't want to go with me, well, I'm not asking them to go anyway. But if somebody disagrees with me, right, then I got no quarrel with that. All right, no, fine. If you don't like it and don't get it, fine. All right, and that to me, because what I found is that it's almost like we talk about what we all have in common and common grounds, how we go against ourselves and all. I mean, because that happens. I've seen it happen so many times. But the thing that I think that's inherent in all of us, all right, is this thing called common sense. All right? But nobody's really making sense right now. Because everybody's fear and reactionary motivated for whatever their cause is. I mean, to a large degree. All right, and what we got to do to these young people, to anybody else, is we got to be as clear and coherent as we can and make sense.
Yeah.
Make sense, right? And as I was saying, don't tell them marijuana is a drug, because that doesn't make sense. Right. You know, because they know, and they don't trust us, and I don't blame them for not trusting us. I mean, you know, if you really get down to it, I don't mean on an but just kind of as a generational thing, because we went out and gave it the best shot that we could, based upon our abilities to perceive reality. All right? And obviously, it had some pluses for it, but it really wasn't, you know, it really didn't solve the problem. Because when I was growing up, where I grew up on the reservation, well, the alcohol and unemployment, see, but now it's meth and crack, right? You know what I mean? And it's much more destructive than it ever was for my generation. It's a much more brutal reality now. You know, and so we did all of the good stuff that we could. We did the best that we could, but the deal is there's an even more brutal reality than the what I see the reality coming for our young ones, the descendants, right, is the reality, I see brutality in that reality that's going to be equivalent to the brutality in our great-grandparents' reality as Indians. Mm-hmm. All right? I mean, I'll say it like that. I mean, for us. See, but I don't mean this, but what I see for the future, white kids are Indians, everybody's, it's a class Indian now, right? And but that kind of a thing. So this is why I think it's important for us. I know it's not fast enough for anybody's clock, but the deal is we need to think. We need to think our way through it. Because an example of that, see, the efforts, like this, what you're doing here, this is a great thing. Even if, I don't know what the numbers are participating in, see, but it's here, it makes sense, and it will think in terms of evolution, right? It will draw more because the energy says that it will, all right? Because there are people that are out there. And to me, it's kind of like, well, we do what we can, make as much sense as we can, right? Because that's what I see as our common denominator, to make as much sense as we can.
Yeah, let me share with you. We have a center that we run, and the children come there. They start out probably when they're 5 years old, and they've been coming for years now. And most of our work is based on energy. And we teach the kids, we don't impose things on them, but we try to take who they are and build from the strength of where they're coming from, as we say, as human beings, right? So that allows them to feel more freely about who they are and be more cooperative in the area, in the camp. So I see what you're saying, and I think it's very important and kind of made it more crystallized, the process that we're doing back home, more important. Because many of these children are now adults. They're not children anymore. But they started out when they were 5 years old and 6 years old in the process. So and I think one of the most important things is what you're saying is think. Reacting out of emotions because you react is something that you're taught. And I think it's really important to recognize that because, you know, we talk about different levels of emotion and what emotions really mean to us. So I think that in that process is what allows the kids to go deeper, right, in terms of feeling who they are. And as we say, you know, it is to create, you know, ourselves as and acknowledge ourselves as human beings. Because we say we will give you the greatest honor, right? We will treat you as a human being. And so that when they come there, that is all that is required of them. Nothing else is, you know, they learn. And I think it's so important that I'm here at this discussion with you today. And as I was telling Mary Lou and them, in our beliefs, nothing is a coincidence. And so I just wanted to thank you for having the opportunity of being here today.
Well, no, I appreciate that. And I do want people to understand, I'm not trying to disrespect whatever our efforts were in the past.
Right.
Right, because we did what we did from what we knew. But we're at the age now where we really have to look at it, you know, look back and say, hold it, this didn't really... See, I don't see enough of that going on because some of the partners I ran with, you know, they didn't learn shit. You know what I mean? They're still trying to pretend it was 1973, you know, and hold it. But I'm sorry, it ain't, you know. I mean, and
not only that, we have an obligation to teach the youth to not make the mistakes we made.
But we have to tell them what the mistakes were,
right,
in a way that makes sense.
We've got to admit mistakes. That's where we often
One of the things, Teresa, I, you know, listen to her stories a lot, and so I always want to add something she may not have thought of, including, I think maybe when I was in the bathroom, were you talking about the Occupy kids being at the camp?
I did mention that.
Yeah, so, I mean, 2.5 years ago, maybe, the Occupy kids came to do this training camp to get ready to go to New York. But so they, you know, they rented the camp, and Starhawk did some permaculture with them, and, you know, there were some interesting things going on. But the most interesting point on this evolutionary process that you're discussing, and how would you get people to not go to the event? I mean, what if they threw an event and nobody came? You know, I've been thinking about this since the Battle of Seattle. And then I was thinking about it with the, was it the Republican convention in Minnesota or something? They spent, you know, zillions of dollars on police fusion technology, and everybody, you know, all the young people went up there so we can get into a big fight. And I mean, I understand that because I grew up in the Bay Area in the 1960s, and thank God for Alcatraz, by the way, because it really did make a difference in our high school, at least to raise our consciousness. But and we started dressing in, you know, Indian headbands and growing our hair long, wearing flak jackets and combat boots and trying to be in solidarity with you guys while you were on the island at Woodside High School. But just so you know, we were there with us. But what was interesting about the Occupy thing is some of the young people that came to the camp and to this land-based outfit, after this whole thing was over and they're all exhausted, some of them came back because they needed to get back to a place to relax again, try to get that, you know, maybe it is the green, you know, and the air and the water and all that. It is. And come back, and really what this one guy wanted to do, they call him Bluebird because he used to sit the tree at Berkeley before they arrested him for trying to stop him from cutting the tree down. All he wanted to do was get back and work with the plants, and he didn't want to kill any bugs. He just wanted to move the bugs from that plant. And he relocated the bugs. He didn't kill them. But that, you know, so it's guys like that who one or two, three, four at a time. Some of them stayed afterwards for a year and embedded in the community. God forbid somebody thought of that. They go do a protest at Los Alamos and everybody left except for three or four of them that said, well, you know what, let's stay in Chimayo. You know, let's stay in Española and let's work with the people in the community, because nobody ever talked to the Chicano rank and file in the community about what the hell's going on at Los Alamos. Or something like that, right? So, I mean, it is that slow, God forbid, that slow evolutionary thing has just about done me in a few times. I get so impatient that it's so slow, and I'm emotionally reactive, and God damn it, you know, but you got to trench it out day after day.
Yeah, I mean, it's evolution. You know, and I do, and I think right now, just with the way everything is going, I think, I'll call this a camp, Bruce, for lack of better terminology,
right.
But I think camps like this are some of the most sensible things that are being done. They're not getting all the glory and all the stuff, see, but I'm telling you, in the long run, all right, because they're land-based and people are, and people involved in these things, and camps like this are keeping a connection to the land, and I think keeping a connection to who they really are themselves, you know, and because I think in a whole lot of ways we all have the self-doubts and all that stuff that was put in us and stuff like that. But I think that people that are working in these kinds have this communication with reality, have a better opportunity to sort out what needs to be sorted out, because this is natural to who we really are, you know? All this stuff is, my answer always comes back to think clearly and coherently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people, that's a frustrating answer because it's not enough of an answer, but it's the answer that has been, to me, it's the answer we avoided listening to for the last 40 years that I was active. You know, because we all had our own agenda, you know, our idealisms and all this and that, you know, because what we're up against in an evolutionary context, to understand what's going on now, politically and economically and with the whole police state apparatus that's evolving and stuff, or that has evolved. In the 60s, the baby boom generation got a lot of attention historically because the baby boom generation showed up and we were the majority, and we showed up and we were for all the right things, civil rights and feminism and or women's rights and earth and no war. For all of the stuff. We were for all of the stuff, right? And we were the majority. But when that industrial ruling class when they figured out what ignited us, all right, what kicked us loose. And what kicked us loose was that America at that time had the most affluent, our generation came into the most affluent generation that had ever probably existed in human history. All right? But because of the technology, materialism, see, and it was that abundance of it. And what it did was it made our generation more fair-minded. See, so more of our generation, well, why can't the blacks have some equality? Why can't we do, a war? See, but it was because of economics. It was because of the affluency that the young generation had. See, now once they figured that out, they started the first redistribution, massive redistribution of the wealth, and it was called an energy crisis, and it came in 1973, and they lined people up for blocks and miles to get gas, and they made them buy gas every other day. I mean, the price of gas went up from 25 cents to 60 cents. The price of bread went up. The price of everything went up. And then they had another one a few years later in the 70s. And then in the 80s, they had the savings and loan deregulation. At the end of the 80s, that had been plundered for billions of dollars, right? Which puts the society generally further and further in debt. And then see, in every decade, they've had a new one because they knew we were the majority. But they needed us to be the labor force, all right, and to carry the lie for the next 40 years, all right. So they had economic redistribution of the wealth because they knew we would have families, we would become more economically dependent. See, so that manipulation has been going on all of this time, and what we're seeing going on now is just an extension of what started out then. Mm-hmm. All right, and practical realities, the police state that is evolving now, and they use Clinton to sell it here because Reagan, Bush couldn't, the NAFTA thing, all right, and the GATT, the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, which created the World Trade Organization, and back when I saw these things in the 90s, and I saw, hold it, this is what the GATT agreement means, this is what the World Trade Organization is, right? Then, and the GATT agreement just basically means everybody that's a part of the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, all right, everybody's a part of that. They agree that the World Trade Organization will be the final decision maker on any economic differences that come from the member nations. Which in effect means that whatever sovereignty America is supposed to have has now become subservient, all right, to this. I mean, this applied mm-hmm. to all countries that went in. Mm-hmm. And it meant as a rough example, it means that if some company in America couldn't make, some huge corporation in America couldn't really make as much profits because of the environmental laws, so to speak, as some country in Bulgaria, they could make, because they didn't have the same environmental thing, then this dispute goes to the World Trade Organization. Three members are the decision makers that are appointed by the corporate state, right? And then whatever their decision is, then that decision is final. So their decision can be, all right, that we have to lower the environmental standards here. All right, see, I mean, this is on paper. I'm not saying it's happening now, but it's, see, and I'm like, well, how the hell are they going to get away with this? See, but then, so they started passing little repressive laws since 1990, and then in 2001, with 9/11, then they got to put the whole package. Anybody from our generation, if you remember, they tried to pass Senate Bill 1 after Nixon had been tossed out of office, and the Patriot Act is Senate Bill 1, but it's a whole high-tech one. All right? So the deal was they made the agreement in the 90s, and then they were setting up their bureaucracy. They spent all this time setting up their bureaucracy, and in setting up their bureaucracy, they also needed to put their enforcement aspects in place. They needed to develop their enforcement aspects. Well, they've got their enforcement aspects in place now. Did you see the Boston bombing and how this wasn't police. This was a military operation looking for these guys, right? You see, huh? And they showed it out public. And there's been many versions of it. There was one in San Francisco. Some shooting on the freeway up that closed down a neighborhood on an exit out there somewhere near Marin. All right. So now we see what their capabilities are. So this is why I'm saying that it's important that we think, right? Because it's a much more dangerous beast than it was before. You know, because in my own personal opinion, there's an industrial ruling class. Communism, Nazism, socialism, all of these were experiments to see, capitalism, all of these were experiments to see which would serve the industrial ruling class's need the best, right? And then, so Russia had gulags. right? But now they got FEMA camps. They just haven't filled them up yet. Mm-hmm. You know, they had that whole thing going on in Central America during with the Contras and all of that when that was going on. They learned how, and that was a training ground, how to deal with mass populations and stuff, you know, all right? But they activated the National Guard. See, here maybe they will not activate the National Guard, or they'll create something else and call it. But see, all of this stuff going on. So this is why it's important for whatever it is we're going to get, our young people are going to get involved in. I think it's important for them to, number one, have a sense of their own self-worth, that they're human beings and know that there's nothing wrong with them, right? Right, and to think. See, and I think it's important as a part of the sense of self-worth, you know, to understanding, not to confuse doing something wrong and thinking something's wrong with you, or believing something's wrong with you. Because a lot of times, because we were imprinted to believe that there's something wrong with us. It's like getting traumatized. You get and I call that a form of trauma. But however the trauma comes, you get the traumatized, the victim of trauma, what do? They react out certain characteristics of the victimization and the trauma. Some kind of way they react it out. All right? And every time they react it out, it makes them feel, blame themselves even more, that there's something even more wrong with them. Right? And this is what I'm saying. It's important to recognize what happened. Right? To recognize it, then you can learn from it and see from it. Right? Because that, what has happened is we've all been traumatized, and then as it's like throwing a stone in a pond, the ripple effect. We've all been traumatized, so it affects our perception and our behavior, our reaction. So we do things now that we judge ourselves for. All right? And that's how this whole thing, that's why it happens like that does. So that way we'll always be judging ourselves and never really seeing ourselves. And that's what, so what I'm getting at. So that's why it's like, so sometimes it's important to understand that it's okay that there's nothing wrong with us because we did wrong things. Because 99% of the time the wrong things were a reaction to something, all right? That, and I'm not saying this to justify continuing to do wrong things, but I'm saying if we understood that, it would help us to see ourselves, and I think especially for younger people, all right? Because I think it's very important, because it's crucial that young people have it explained to them in some kind of way so that they start to think about that there isn't something wrong with them. Because I think that's the core of everyone.
They're doing what they're doing because they're supposed to do it based on how they live, what's been presented to them, how they're being educated, how their environment is.
Or the lack of.
They're doing exactly what they're supposed to do.
The lack of education.
But we want them to think. We want to inspire them to question. We want to inspire them to look it up for yourself. Don't believe me. But I'm trying to give you my experience, my history, my thoughts, ideas, and hopefully it will give you an opportunity to use the resources you got, your technology, you know? And if they don't have technology, we help them get technology, you know? You know, Googling, computers, all that, look this stuff up, you know? And then let's have a discussion. And I like that, not judge them.
You know,
if we don't judge them, it opens the door.
We're not respecting our Creator when we start judging.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's that basic to me. You know, no, that's not. You know, we weren't put here to be judges. No, we were put here to see. We're put here to recognize.
I was asked by a teacher to come to a class and talk about marijuana. And the first thing the student asked me, "Is it bad for them?" And I said, "No." She almost fell off the chair. And I said, "Well, it's not. If you need it. A person that has glaucoma and they need to get release the pressure in their eyes, they smoke marijuana. Somebody that had AIDS, they kept throwing up food. It helps you to put it down. You know, so if it's bringing balance to you, it's increasing your life, and that's been paid. But in this society, you've got to recognize that there's laws against it. UCSC, they have marijuana day, right?
Yeah.
Thousands of people go up there. A young man that we work with, he goes down Watsonville, walks down the street, and bam, he gets picked up, and he's up in juvenile hall.
Yep.
The same day that they had thousands of people that were just, hey, go for it. So, again, this is our reality. We have to deal with the reality. Yeah. Okay, maybe it's not good. Maybe it's not good for you or not bad for you. Do you need it? Or at this time, you're on probation. You know?
Hmm.
You know? So, you know, yeah, we have a, you know, for me, you know, I look and I hear your stories and stuff, and I hear, you know, having the circling. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're not. You know, because this has been given to us. And, but again, we have some consciousness. We have history. How do we use that in order to be more mindful of what we do every day? And also to combat that which we know is not right. The injustices, the inequalities in the society, and the things that keep being and going on and keep being perpetuated. You know, how do we change that? I like the idea in our community. You know, I say, you know, sometimes we might say, well, where are you spending your money? Do you really got to go there and put that money in McDonald's? For the others, you know? And we're always saying that we ain't got much. Why? What else can we do? So sometimes we have a cooking class.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when they eat, especially in the morning, they have a whole different attitude.
That's right. In Bogota, Colombia, not so long ago, maybe, what, 3 or 4 years ago, they had a general strike where nobody drove cars for a whole day in Bogota. Do you remember that? I mean, that's the kind of thing you're talking about that would make more impact if you could think it out and get people to do it.
That's right, because it's like, because I came with this thing about not spending any money on one day, right? And it's,
right.
But it's because that's a form of that.
Right.
Because when you look at it, everything's about energy, but it's also about money. Mm-hmm. Right? And protesting, I mean, and I'm not trying to discourage, because I know you got to put body politic into it sometime. But to just protest, the way, number one, you buy magic markers to make your signs, right? You buy your bottles of water, and you buy your snack food, and you right? You get all your stuff, your little outfit to go. So you're spending money. You spend huge amounts of money get spent to get to the protest, you know, beating the oppressor economy. Then the cops get to come in and beat you up, right? They get to practice their little tactical games and stuff, you know, and they'll always send someone in to justify them being able to come in, because generally the rogue elements are plants, right. You know, what they used to call them, red squads back in our day, right? But they're red squads, in it, which you know, that police can justify coming in and things like that. So these kinds of things where we're not cooperating by feeding into that system. And I think the first thing, though, the first thing to start talking with young people about, or anybody about, but with young people, is number one, is know who you are and trust yourself, right? And don't believe them. But think. See, it's not just enough to say don't believe, right? Because they already don't believe, but it's okay not to believe. But think. You really think. Because sometimes we believe we don't believe something, but we do. But when we activate our intelligence to thinking and just know within our own heads and really thinking, that stuff does get sorted out.
Is there a way to teach someone to think?
Can I give an
idea? Yeah, I think about that.
Okay.
First of all, I want to thank everybody for, you know, to be around the circle. And the one example I can give you is, you know, I had a group of students in Concord, California that were dressing all in black. So I took a picture of them and I showed it to them. Because they were all wearing hoodies, they were all dividing themselves from the rest of the school. And this is the group that was getting targeted from the whole school, not only from the teachers, but from their own peers. So I just turned around and I showed them the picture of themselves standing in the corner in all black. I got them to see that they were looking like if they were at a funeral.
Mm.
But it took me to take that picture. It took me not to turn my back on them. You know?
Why were they dressing in black?
Because that's the in thing.
Was their in thing?
Yeah, that's what's up. You know, that's what's in style.
It's cool.
Yeah. You know, that's what's cool.
But you got them to think about it.
Yeah. And a lot of times that's what we could afford. You know, this is the hoodie is the only thing that's going to keep me warm, and that's the only thing I could afford at the time. For me, it's been really hard to get the adults to really listen, because I think as youngster, as person being young, we already know what we need. You know, we've been getting shot at, chased for a very long time. And, you know, I have these guys at the hall and at the jail. I mean, all we need is a tattoo removal program for them to get a job. And we can't find the funding, we can't help the necessary needs to get that accomplished. And I have 4 to 5 guys, you know, with jobs already waiting for them, but they won't get them because of the tattoos.
How much does it cost for one guy?
I really don't know. I mean, for us, it's really, it's thinking, how do we take that? Because we could go and go to Dominican and get that removed. But how can we take it and make it our own? I don't want to go to Dominican. I want somebody that has been through the process to remove my tattoo. So it's not only the machine, but how do we get a center for ourselves? Because
right.
That same person that got his tattoo removed can also remove somebody else's. And he has a new job, too.
We need to go further back. We need to get before the tattoo comes. We need to address that situation.
So we have, and the ways
one of the reasons, one of the reasons, you know, someone was saying you work with the youth in Jim Hall.
Yeah.
And you're successful. Why are you successful?
Because we're on the street.
No. Why are you successful when you're working with those youth? Why? Because you're working with small numbers. How many are you working with? 4, 5? Are you working with 35 at a time?
I think more because I'm also on the street. I'm also at home. I'm at my church.
Right.
You know, but, so and it's not only the kids that I'm working with, it's also the people that don't have tattoos because they're the ones calling the shots, they're the ones that are voting for these laws that are getting these kids caught up in these long sentences. So it's really it's not only the kids that I work with, it's all around.
Right.
And it's educating
community.
The adults too what that tattoo removal program is gonna do to that kid.
And sometimes it's just moments of success.
Yeah.
It's not like, because if it was that we were successful, then hey, boom, we move on. No, we get little things.
Little victories.
Yeah. Little ones. And hopefully these are planting seeds that, again, will blossom or will be shared.
Well, what I was trying to get to is that if we can start at the beginning and move people into small groups, rather than these large mega groups that we put them in, they have a better chance of not having these problems.
Well, I look at it like this. When somebody has an illness, it's acute, and you have to deal with that. They got a fever. You got to break the fever. But there's a root cause of that problem. Mm-hmm. And if we don't deal with that root cause, it will, boom, come right back
come
up.
Back.
And it could come up worse or take them out.
The root cause is they think there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we do, because we deal with generational uses of heroin addiction, known as the heroin capital of the country. And so you will have parents, grandparents, grandchildren, great-grandchildren in the same room using. And one of the things that we do at the camp, because it isn't an easy process, you know, I think we're all trying to be creative and think about what will make it better or what will lessen the pain and the hurt that has been inflicted, because it's all of that that comes with it. And I think one of the things that we deal with our young people is that, first of all, they have to know that they're safe. And they have to know that their environment is safe. And they have to feel comfortable with the people that are around them. And feel that, you know, that they're not going to be judged. Which is really important. And one of the things that we've done at the camp is that parents are encouraged to come and contribute some hours to the camp, because they pay no money, nobody, to come. But I don't encourage a lot of parents to come. And the reason is that, like I tell the parents, if the discipline has to come, it has to come from the collective, not from the parent.
Here.
Okay. And I think that much of what happens is that when you don't entrust young people to have the ability to make those decisions, to be able to implement those decisions,
you know, because of our adultism and our knowledge and knowing, and you know, it was like I was saying earlier,
that's a good newism.
You know, that one of the things is that our knowledge is only to help you, not to say it's the solution. The only thing we want to do is to keep you in some ways from making the same mistake, but not take it away from you, because that's your process. We can't take that process away, but what we can do is share what we do have. And I think that's important. And listen to young people when they say, we want a tattoo place, but we want it to come and be somewhere where it's safe and people feel safe to be able to go there and say, this person's going to remove this tattoo in a good way, without being judgmental of why it got there or how it got there, right, or things like that. So I think there's an important a part that we need to go to and asking ourselves those questions. And I think you tapped on them, and that is part of the human element of who we are. Because I think when we don't trust and we don't know ourselves, then we project those onto others.
Uh-huh.
And so I try to keep the adults from coming to the camp so that they do not project their isms of all the isms onto young people. So I think that getting back to what you're talking about is that we have to go way back to that part of who we are as human, and to be able to think and allow.
We have to get back to the being part of human.
Yes.
That's what we have to do.
Well, the adults, I'll say this as advisedly as I can, the adults think that they have to compete with the kids for my wife's attention. So what happened was the kids, you know, needed the time to be safe, and the adults were coming in there going, hey, I thought you were going to work on our problems. And so actually, you know, when our mentor told us, you know, you might have to go through losing all the adults just so you can, you know, be able to be there with the kids. The thing that got me immediately interested in what Felipe was saying, though, is there's so many impediments, whether it's tattoo removal, for somebody to get a job. You know, so when you're talking about body deployment, just to be able to do collective labor, I mean, even just to have people working together, I mean, imagine if you could clean the forest so these things wouldn't burn down to the ground. Now, that's a bigger question, but it's smaller groups of people. You know, if I had four or five guys, you know, in our forest to help me, you know, so they go through this process of healing and being safe and then being able to think, and then if they can get their tattoo removed, they might be able to get a job. And if I had four or five guys in the forest, you know, I'd be a happy camper. But the other thing I wanted to say was, does that mean, like, if you like other people, does that mean you like yourself?
Not necessarily.
Right.
But liking ourselves is really something that
takes a lot of work.
Well, I like myself, and I'm lazy.
I like myself.
But the deal, but somehow that, but I say it's in talking with young people. I mean anybody, but there's a focus on young people. This is what I'm saying, is this is about reaching some kind of understanding that there's nothing wrong with them,
yeah,
and not to confuse some of their behaviors. All right, that there is something wrong with them, that it is okay to like themselves. But I think it's something that kind of gets communicated, you know, and in a lot of ways, I think things that we have to say to young people, it's all in how it's said. If we say it in a way that makes sense, all right, if we speak to them in a way that will make sense to them, all right, some of them will get it and some of them won't. But this is just, I mean, this is the math of reality, right? But you say it, to, you just keep saying what makes sense to them, all right? Looking for the ones that do get it. Because the ones that get it, then they'll make sense to somebody else. I mean, we're dealing with that basic of a mathematical equation. But I think that it spreads more quickly than we tend to give it credit for. Yes.
And you're right. I mean, because a lot of these kids, they either use hip-hop now, poetry, tagging, graffiti art, and it is. It's one person's going to get one thing, but that person's going to project it out to
That's
the
right.
rest of them in their way, and they're going to get it. It's been working since, hip-hop for me has educated me where reading and writing didn't.
Yeah.
And I've been able to educate myself about politics through the music, through the art. So it's having these kids to realize that they have that gift, no matter what it is. I think one of the things that has made a difference is really understanding that when I found that gift to just stick with it, because many times, I DJ, and my dad, the first thing my dad told me was, what are you going to do with that? How are you going to make a living with that? And it wasn't until years later that I traveled and I did make a living off of that, he realized, wow, he made a mistake by telling me that.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we support those kids that do have that art? Because they could probably talk to that kid that I couldn't.
Well, it's getting past 5:30. We have food, so we can continue the discussion. But just one thing I wanted to say that I think what I value and what John's saying is that we don't know how change is going to happen. If we knew, it would have already have happened. But if you take step by step, you think we know how change is going to happen. There's forces that kind of block that. So we don't know how it's going to happen. So that's why we have to think and be creative and be open to anything. But we don't know where it's going to come from. When I got involved with the Grange, who would ever have thought the Grange would become a progressive center for community activities?
It's become a community.
I mean, its history in the last at least 50, 60 years has been pretty reactionary.
Well, didn't start off.
Yeah. I mean, 100 years ago, it was very progressive.
It was progressive.
It became a very conservative, white-only organization.
Yeah. I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, so just being open to anything, whether it's hip-hop or the Grange, I mean, we don't know where change is going to come from. We have to be thinking and creative and be open to it.
And one thing I would add to that about creative, I think about explaining to young people, for anybody, but if we're speaking in terms of young, is that understanding that their creative mind is always active. All right, and it's how the creative mind is being used. If we're using the creative mind to create negative images of us because we've been told we're not good enough, all right, see, so no one, so guys, a lot of them will say, well, we'll hear that, well, I'm not a creative person, I'm not a thing. But the deal is, we all are, we create our own reality every day on how we how we were imprinted to perceive reality. So if a lot of time is devoted, the creative intelligence is put into thinking I'm not any good or I'm not good enough or this or that. See, so I think it's important to explore that, start exploring that dialogue with them about everybody is creative. It's just how do we create and what do we create? Yes.
Well, a quick one. It can happen really fast any time. I was looking for a CD player at Abbott's Thrift, and there were two little kids down on the floor near the electronics section. And I was just standing there like this. You know, I've been looking in the shelves here, and they were looking at a scuba mask. One little kid was about 6, and his brother was 4. And his little brother says, "What's that for?" And the older one said, "That's so you can be safe." And I went, I'm either going to puke or say something. And I said, "Hey, you know what that's for?" And he looked up and said, "No, what's that for?" And I said, "That is so you can breathe underwater." And I walked off. I'm just like, 6-foot honky. But what I heard behind me was the little kid said, "What is it for?" And the older one said, "It's so you can breathe underwater." I was like, made my day.
Also, John's got a few CDs, and this is what he talks about on here is a lot about what he's been talking about today. So they're $10, so it's worth getting.
Let's get it.
Well, I made as much sense as I could. All right, and whatever I said did, and whatever I said didn't make sense, keep it to yourself because I don't want to hear it. If it didn't make sense, I don't want to hear it.
Made a lot of sense.
We evolved to it.
You know, we don't get much of these kind of discussions back home. You know, we live in the Santa Fe world. We call it Santa Fe. And our part of the world has changed a lot. And so, and we don't, a lot of people come to our property, our home. As a matter of fact, I have some people that are there from Canada right now, waiting for me to get home. But this has been, you know, this has been really nice to be able to sit here and talk with people that have been involved in the movement for a long time. You know, because you don't get that. And you don't see these discussions a lot anymore. I remember in the 70s and early 80s that we would have these discussions and people would think sometimes. and it was nice. So this has been, you know, this has really been nice. It's been really nice and really nice to share with you and to hear. I've always heard your music.
That's good. I like that.
And I say, all right. You know, so it's nice.
I had a thought, John, on electromagnetic theory. And I used to study this guy named Tesla.
Well, Tesla was the man. Yeah.
I thought maybe you were. Yeah. So when you get a when the earth and the brain get in resonance, because funnily enough, the ionosphere cavity resonates at 7.5 hertz, which is also alpha frequency in the brain, because the ionosphere cavity is called the Schumann resonance. So a guy named Schumann, you know, back in the 50s, figured this out. And so there becomes, they call it the brainwave entrainment to the Earth's ionosphere's wave guide. And so what I'm thinking, of course, is when you get your clear and present thinking, you know, in phase, there's a phenomenon called the exponential. And so when two waves get resonant, the free electrons that are in the ambient atmosphere, I'm kind of using some old Tesla language, they start stacking into the resonance and it starts to take off exponentially. So let's hope as we can do this that we start to see some of those effects.
Well, everything's about frequencies.
Right.
We tune our own frequency because what we're being electrically jammed with all the electronics. They're altering the frequencies.
That's right.
I mean, it's actually like, they're harnessing the energy.
That's the first thing I studied, actually, when I got to Congressman Pete McCloskey's office in 1977 in D.C., was he had me on the fact that the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit System, was like an electrified cable in the ground. And it was interfering with the magnetic fields of nature and the surrounding area. So one of the Stanford scientists had put a magnetometer on a tree to see what would happen to the tree's receptivity to the extra low frequency waves that it was receiving from space. Oak trees, of course.
It's just a minute.
So let's go druid with that.
Right? I'm like, yeah. When they take off, what does that mean? Like, when they exponentially pile up and they take off, what does take off mean?
Oh, no, I was just saying.
What does that mean? What happens?
Well, you mean when the wave exponentially increases?
Just
yeah, and you
I'm
said then
done.
The ions and the electrons.
Well, the free electrons start stacking onto the base wave, yeah. And so it increases the...
And then what? Then you get more alpha? Or
yeah, you,
alpha
well, you would... Well... I guess it depends. on the frequency.
Okay.
Okay. But you could get a multi-wave effect. It just depends what you've got in there. Okay. But
that's
yeah,
why
I
we
mean,
were able to communicate a long distance.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
With, before they interfered.
Yeah, before the interference. That's right.
If the web kind of shows us what we can do when the web goes down. We could do all that, right, without the web.
Well, we did it without, yeah, I mean, the web is just an artificial system
exactly.
of what we already did.
And we'll do it, hopefully.
Before they started telling us you need to use the web, the text, and everything.
To think.
No. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Now?
Yeah, now.
Say now. Now or never.
She's so cute. Thank you.
Okay.